Let's talk some more basketball. We are joined right now by a national NBA writer for the Washington Post, host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, friend of the program, and as you know, the author of Bubble Ball. It is out right now. He is Ben Golliver. Ben, it's great to have you back. Ben, how you feeling?
Oh, it's great to be back, Jim. I'm here in Milwaukee. You know, before this Bucks Nets series, everybody said, hey, maybe it's going to be like a finals preview. I tell you what, this has felt like a finals with the momentum swings back and forth. KD has that unbelievable game five in Brooklyn the other night. And then I think it just kind of got buried in just a wave of crazy NBA news yesterday. So my head has been spinning both from great basketball and all sorts of transactional news, too.
This is exactly why I called you, Ben, to get into all of that, because the basketball has been wild, the transactional news as well. Since you are in Milwaukee and you started right there, let me get your thoughts first about Kevin Durant. Take me back to Game 5. What did you make of what you saw from Kevin Durant in that game?
Well, best game that I've ever seen him play, flat out, period, full stop. You know, I don't think you have to qualify it at all. You know, he was very cagey afterwards. He didn't want to try to rank it against any of his other performances. He had a really nice 43-point game in a finals against LeBron. He had a career-high 50 in the playoffs against the Clippers, you know, in 2019. But it was just the level of mastery. I mean, he goes all 48 minutes. He's playing hard the entire way. He's got James Harden basically on one leg, you know, giving it the best that he can. And in all of the biggest moments, it was either Kevin hitting shots, Kevin making defensive plays like that steal on Giannis late, or Kevin making really smart passes. And I think to me, that was the biggest doubt I had going into Game 5. We've never seen Kevin Durant as this point forward type of guy. He has never really been in that LeBron mold. But with Harden limited and Kyrie out, he's got to do a lot of the ball handling and the playmaking for his teammates. And he got a really nice boost from Jeff Green hitting all those three-pointers to kind of help them, you know, dig out of a 17-point hole. But it was just a phenomenal all-around effort. And I don't know about you. I mean, my mind was flashing back to when he was injured in the 2019 finals and how sad that was. And we're wondering, does this alter his career? Is he ever going to be able to get back to this sort of peak version that we saw at this point? And let me tell you, you score 49 points and play 48 minutes, and you've got your big rival Giannis telling everybody after the game that you're the best player in the world. I don't think it gets much better than that.
No, Ben, I can answer your question. That's exactly what I was thinking. In fact, I'm still in awe of it. That's an injury, as you know, as we all know, that can end careers, alter careers, change careers, make things irreparably damaged. I can't believe that he came back the way he has and played that game. You know, really quickly, Ben, to that point, he not only played all 48 minutes in Game 5, to your point, he had to do everything on both ends. Maybe it's hard to quantify or predict, but if you had to guess, do you think there will be any repercussions from having to lay out what he laid out for as long as he did in that game tonight?
Well, I'm telling you what, I think I'm probably going back to Brooklyn for Game 7 later this week, because you've got not only KD playing 48, you had Harden play 46 minutes, Jim. Now, granted, he's not running around all over the court. He was playing kind of defensively with his body, trying not to do too much, settling for a lot of jumpers, you know, not working super hard laterally on defense. And just, you know, if you have to give up some points here and there to protect your hamstring, you do it. I understand that calculation. But still, that's a massive workload. And, you know, the Bucks have been ramping up the minutes for their stars a little bit, but not to that same level. And they only had one day off here, and they had to travel. So to me, I am looking for Milwaukee to have the advantage in Game 6. They played very well at home in Game 4. They won an ugly game at home in Game 3. And the Bucks fans, they really caught their swagger. And they were a little bit nervous after the Bucks were down 2-0. But when they evened that series 2-2, you know, they were loud in that building, and I think that they're going to be back, you know, hoping to even this series. And the environment stuff here during these playoffs, I want to make this point, it really matters. I mean, these do feel like traditional playoff games. We have kind of entered outside of that, like, phased pandemic situation where the buildings were only half full or a quarter full. I mean, these buildings are really, really loud. They're stacked to the gills with fans, and people are loving it. And it just contributes to the atmosphere and the showcase that we're getting here from KD and Giannis.
It's a really good point. I thought the same thing last night. Even though the Clippers got over on the road, I thought the same thing in watching 18,000 at Salt Lake City. Ben Golliver, my guest. Ben, what about Giannis? Like, there's no denying how great Giannis is, and he still had that 34-point double-double. But when you see his team blow a big lead against a wounded Nets team, does it impact the way you view Giannis?
Not really, but I was raising my eyebrows at his comments calling KD the best player in the world and going on at length about how difficult it is to stop him. You know, I almost wanted to, like, pop into that Zoom call and be like, hey, Giannis, enough is enough, man. You got to go play this guy on Thursday night. Don't get carried away here. I mean, you're in this conversation for the best player in the world, too. I mean, give yourself some credit. I just wonder psychologically if KD got into their head a little bit with how dominant he was. You know, you look down the stretch, it was a lot of mistakes from the Milwaukee Bucks. If they go out in six and they kind of peter out in the fourth quarter again tonight, I think that's going to wind up leading to a coaching change, because you just see these situations over and over and over again. When they need to execute, they struggle to get good shots. They don't know exactly where they want to go with the basketball, and that often leads to Giannis kind of being the bailout guy. And we know he's not the best free throw shooter. He's not the best three-point shooter. And in those late game situations, you know, sometimes it's not always the best shots for them. So they had much better flow as a team in game four down the stretch than they did in game five. And they're going to try to get back to that. To me, though, look, there's no shame in losing to Kevin Durant when he puts up 49 points in 48 minutes, right? Like, I don't necessarily hold that against Giannis, but I do think he's got something to prove here, and he needs to punch back.
Ben Culver is joining us. All right, Ben, what about the Atlanta Hawks? Like, when they made their coaching change, I mean, was there any thinking in your mind that that could somehow lead them to be in a position where they are right now, one game from the conference finals?
Well, I mean, think about the previous coaching change, Jim. When Mike Budenholzer leaves Atlanta to go to Milwaukee, did we ever think that Atlanta could be in the conference finals this year and Milwaukee could potentially be going out in the second round? I certainly never did. It seemed like a huge upgrade for Coach Bud. And you turn back around and Trae Young is just playing sensational basketball and leading the Hawks. What I love about Atlanta, and I think Clint Capella says something along these lines, they sort of have painted Philly almost like a first-half team, right? You just wait till Embiid gets fatigued down the stretch. You wait till the pressure tightens on guys like Simmons, who doesn't want to be on the free throw line, who can't space the court with his shooting, and you just keep doing what you do well, and there's a chance, no matter how big the lead gets for Philly's standpoint, that you're going to be able to launch a comeback. They've done it multiple times in this series. They did it again last night. You just never count out this Hawks team, in part because you can't ever rely on Philly to get it done late. I thought it was an absolute mess of a second half for them. They only had two guys who made baskets in the second half, Seth Curry and Joel Embiid, and Simmons 4-for-14 from the free throw line. He's always been ducking these critiques, Jim. He's one of these guys who kind of wants to, stay above the noise on a lot of this stuff. And I almost want to scream at him, get back in the gym, get working on these flaws, because he has not improved as an offensive player at all since he's reached the NBA, and it comes back to bite them in the playoffs every single year.
Ben Culver joining us. Extremely well said. I agree with you. So what about the Clippers, right? They take on the Jazz in Salt Lake City. Ben, they've got to go there without Kawhi Leonard. Going into the game, I had a certain level of expectations, and they were not very high for the Clippers, and I was all wrong about that. How did you see that game playing out before the ball went up?
Well, look, whoever bet on the Clippers last night, Jim, probably made a lot of money, right? Because I was right there with you. I wrote them off. I said, look, they don't have Kawhi, who has been carrying them throughout this playoffs. I mean, 30 points per game, a lot of really important defensive possessions on key star players late in games. He's been the guy who's really been the difference for them. I thought they just played free and loose, no expectations. It obviously really opened up a much larger role for Paul George. And I do think it's kind of a takeaway. The partnership with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard has never been as seamless as like Anthony Davis and LeBron James. I mean, those guys hit the ground running for the Lakers, right? The Clippers, it was always a little bit of my turn, your turn. I think people tend to walk on eggshells around Kawhi Leonard a little bit because you don't always know what he's thinking, and because he does dominate the basketball a lot, so people tend to defer. And I think what we saw from Paul George is like you didn't have to do any of that stuff. You keep the ball moving. You make sure the three-point shooters get going. Morris, Reggie Jackson, Nicholas Batum all contributing. And then Paul George kind of just gets to freelance with a lot of space and do his thing. They took it right to Utah. I was very disappointed in the Utah Jazz last night. Donovan Mitchell, who had a great start to the series, needed to be better and more impactful offensive player. I'm sure he's being limited at least somewhat by his health. And then other than Bojan Bogdanovic, who else stepped up for the Jazz? And then in crucial moments, the ball kept going to Royce O'Neal for some of these big shots in the fourth quarter. That's where the Clippers want the ball to go to, right? They want your fifth option trying to beat you. And I think Utah just couldn't get in situations where their main guys had the basketball. And that's a problem. They've had great coaching all year from Quinn Snyder, and I just thought they didn't really live up to that standard in Game 5 last night. That's why they're staring at elimination.
Well, right, and then there's a reason why he's open, to your point.
Right.
Ben, they want the ball going to him, and that's exactly why that goes. Hey, Ben, to your point at the very top, there was so many news items also. What about the fact that Stan Van Gundy is out after 1 year, Scott Brooks is moving on? What are some of your reactions to some of the news that went down aside from the games themselves?
Well, look, if you had bad news, you need to tell the public, Jim. Yesterday was the day to do it. You know, everybody saw that Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard headline and was like, all right, rush this news out. Let's get the press releases flowing. I thought from Stan Van Gundy, he never really connected to his young stars, in my opinion. You know, Brandon Ingram wasn't playing hard enough all season long, especially on the defensive end. He got his stats because he's a talented player, but that commitment, that buy-in was just never there. I know Stan Van Gundy tried to push a lot of buttons, you know, trying to motivate him at different points of the season. I just don't think it works. And the clock's ticking on Zion, too. I mean, look, the number one pick, I'm the fresh guy in town. You know, here we are to kind of save the day after Anthony Davis. That era is over. Like, it's time for Zion to start winning. Some of the moves by the front office to surround him with talent have not really worked out very well. And I'm not sure, you know, Stan Van Gundy necessarily connected with him as well. Maybe there's just a generational gap. I don't know what you want to chalk it up to. But they were one of the biggest disappointing teams of the season. And so I think a coaching change was warranted there. And then you look at Washington with Scott Brooks. I mean, I think the writing was on the wall there. You look at the size of his contract coming into this season. It was a very similar situation to Mike D'Antoni in Houston last year or Billy Donovan in Oklahoma City last year, where, you know, I think the ownership groups are just saying, hey, look, we can't pay premium prices for coaches, you know, in this pandemic economy and with teams that really aren't going to be competing for titles.
Finally, Ben, what do you make of LeBron posting a series of tweets laying out that he had been concerned about injuries all year long because the offseason was so short? You were in the bubble. You know the toll that it took on everybody. How much of the injuries that we're seeing would be attributed to the short offseason and the condensed regular season? And is he warranted in what he says?
Well, look, first of all, yeah, I'm right there with LeBron. I mean, I think a lot of people who were in the bubble, players and everybody else, were definitely feeling a fatigue, a hangover, and like a real, you know, rush back into this season. There's kind of no question about it. It doesn't surprise me at all that the final four teams that were in the bubble last year, Boston, Miami, Denver, and the Lakers, all went out early and all dealt with either health protocol issues or serious injuries, you know, during this season. I just don't think that's a coincidence. Now, the NBA has pushed back and say, hey, look, the injury rate is pretty similar this year compared to last year. And my counter to that would be, to Jim, would be it's still too high. It was too high last year and it's too high this year because you look at every single one of these series, they're being impacted by major injuries to star-level guys. And so the NBA was just in a tough spot. They needed to generate as much revenue as possible. They needed to be on Christmas. They wanted to be done before the Olympics. They wanted to get their playoff window back to where, like, they're the featured television product and they didn't have to compete with anybody else. So this was always going to be the bite the bullet season. I just think it's kind of funny, Jim. Like, LeBron's message at the beginning of the season was like, this is kind of unfair to the Lakers. It's such a quick turnaround. Now his message is, oh, you know, my heart bleeds for all my fellow players. And I sense a shift or maybe, you know, he's kind of capitalizing here on this moment to kind of drive home the fact that he wanted it a different way than it wound up playing out.
He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post, host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, good friend of the program, and his book is out, Bubble Ball. Ben Golver, my guest. Ben, great job. Really good to have you on. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, as always.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jim. Take care, man.
Great job, Ben. Really well done.